If you look at the modern playbook for fast food success, it's pretty rigid.
Oh, yeah, it's an efficiency model.
Totally. You streamline the menu to shave seconds off the drive-through time. You force everyone onto some proprietary app just to harvest their data.
And you franchise as fast as you possibly can to just dominate the map. Standardization is everything.
Exactly. But then you have this anomaly in the American South, a chain that seems to look at that playbook and just do the exact opposite.
Right.
No official app, a menu that looks like a chaotic wall of text, and drive-through lines that for some reason are longest at 2 in the morning. Today, we are unpacking the cult of cookout.
It really is a fascinating case study. I mean, we're talking about a family-owned chain from North Carolina that has managed to hold its ground and even expand against these global giants without using any of the standard
And
tools.
without it, a huge marketing budget. The brand loyalty is almost entirely word of mouth. People don't just eat there. They have like strong emotional opinions about their tray combinations.
They really do. And we've got a great stack of sources to figure out why. We're looking at the company's history, some deep dives into their menu, their allergen guides, which are interesting,
Oh, I bet.
and even some third-party delivery data to see how all this chaos actually works as a business.
Chaos is the perfect word for it. I remember the first time I pulled up to one, it was overwhelming. But before we get to the food, we need to understand where this place even came from, because it feels personal.
That's because it is. It all starts back in 1989 in Greensboro, North Carolina. A man named Morris Reeves opens the first one. And the most critical piece of this whole story is this. It is still privately owned.
Which is so rare for a chain with what, over 350 locations now?
Incredibly rare. Usually, once you hit that 50 or 100 store mark, private equity comes knocking, or you
Or
IPO.
you franchise. That's the easy way to scale, right? You let other people pay to build those stores.
But the Reeves family, Morris, is still the owner. His son Jeremy is the CEO. They've kept it all in-house. They do not franchise.
So every single cookout is a corporate store.
Every single one. And that explains the slow burn of their expansion. They aren't just popping up everywhere overnight. They expand into South Carolina, then Georgia, Virginia, but it's at a pace they can control.
And control seems to be the key word, especially with food quality. Their big slogan is always fresh, never frozen.
Which is a bold claim for a place that sells burgers for, a couple of bucks.
It is. I mean, Wendy's says that too, but Cookout's logistics are just different.
They are. The sources all highlight that the meat is ground, pattied, and cooked fresh daily at the locations. They aren't trucking in frozen pucks.
And that connects back to the no franchising rule, doesn't it?
It has to. I mean, can you imagine trying to police a fresh meat policy across 350 locations owned by 50 different operators all trying to cut costs?
It'd be a nightmare.
A total nightmare. By owning everything, they can actually enforce that mandate. It's a logistical headache, for sure, but it's the hill they've chosen to die on.
It also kind of explains the buildings themselves. They don't look like a normal fast food place.
No, they're very distinct. The classic cookout design is the double drive-through. Two lanes, a walk-up window, and almost no indoor seating.
It's just a kitchen with a traffic jam wrapped around it.
It is. It's a machine designed for vehicular throughput. They aren't trying to sell you an experience. They are selling you hot food in your car fast.
Okay, so let's unpack the menu. Because if the building is utilitarian, the menu is, well, it's just complex. But the anchor of the whole thing is the cookout tray.
The tray is the economic engine of the whole company. It's absolutely brilliant.
So for anyone who's never been, walk us through the mechanics of ordering a tray.
Okay, so it's a bundled meal. You choose one main item, then you choose two sides and a drink. And the price is somewhere between, say, $7 and $12.
But the size, that's where reality starts to bend a little bit.
Yeah.
Because when I go to Burger King, a side is fries, maybe onion rings if I'm feeling crazy.
Right. At Cookout, the list of sides includes things that any other restaurant would call a main dish. You can get a corn dog.
A corn dog is a side.
A corn dog. You can get a chicken quesadilla as a side, a bacon wrap, hush puppies.
Wait, so I could theoretically order a burger as my main, and then for my two sides, get two chicken quesadillas.
You absolutely could, and people do.
That feels like a loophole in the system. How does the math even work on that? You're getting three sandwich-type things for the price of one meal.
And this is the psychology of the tray. It is designed to make you feel like you are beating the house.
Like you stamped them.
Exactly. You look at that receipt and think, I just got so much food for $8 I won. But obviously, they aren't losing money.
No.
It's a classic mix. The burger, the fresh beef that might be your loss leader or break even. But a corn dog, a quesadilla, those are cheap carbohydrates.
Batter, tortilla, a little cheese.
The food costs on a corn dog is pennies. So by bundling them, they make sure the average ticket price is high enough while you, the customer, perceive this massive value because of the sheer volume of food.
And notice the language. It's a tray, not a combo.
Yes. A combo is a burger and fries. A tray sounds like a feast. It implies you need two hands to carry it.
Okay, speaking of the burger, even if you just order a burger, you are not done making choices.
No, not at all. You have to pick a style. And this is another brilliant operational hack.
Break down the styles for us.
So most chains, when they want a new burger, they bring in some weird new ingredient like a special sauce or a fancy bun.
Right, and it's only there for 6 weeks.
Cookout doesn't do that. They use their standard pantry ingredients, onions, mustard, chili, bacon, cheese, but they arrange them into these preset styles.
It's modular.
Perfectly modular. So the flagship is Cookout style. That's homemade chili, slaw, mustard, and onion.
Which we should say, that's Carolina style. Chili and coleslaw on a burger might sound insane if you're not from the South, but it's incredible.
It is. The hot chili, the coleslaw, it's a texture thing.
Really?
But if you don't want that, you can get cheddar style, cheddar cheese sauce, bacon, grilled onions, mayo.
Or out west style.
Right. BBQ sauce, bacon, mayo, pickles, onion. Or steak style, which is A1 sauce, grilled onions, lettuce, tomato.
It's the same patty, same bun, but by mixing and matching condiments, they create the illusion of this massive, diverse menu.
And for the kitchen, it's totally manageable. They just need a very well-organized condiment station. High variety, low inventory complexity.
Okay, we can't put it off any longer. We have to talk about the milkshakes.
The fancy milkshakes.
This is their legend, right? The billboard always says 40-plus flavors.
And that plus is doing a lot of heavy lifting because the menu explicitly encourages you to mix any flavors you want.
So the actual number of combinations
here, it's in the thousands. It's mathematical madness.
But how do they do it? The ice cream machine at McDonald's is broken half the time. How does this little shack keep 40 flavors running at 2 a.m.?
Well, it's surprisingly low tech. They don't have 40 different soft serve machines. They have a vanilla base. The flavors are all syrups, fresh fruits, and candy that they hand spin into the shake.
Oh, so it's more like a Blizzard or a McFlurry.
Exactly. But the ingredients are what sets it apart. The sources all emphasize that the fruit shakes, banana, peach, watermelon juice, actual real fruit.
That watermelon shake is a cult unto itself.
It's a seasonal event, only available in July and August. And because they use fresh watermelon, it has this texture you just can't fake with a syrup. It creates scarcity. People literally mark their calendars.
And then in December, it's the fresh eggnog shake.
Right. But the year-round menu is just as wild. They have a dessert category where they will blend pastries into the shake.
You're talking about the cheesecake shake.
Yes. They take an actual slice of cheesecake and blend it in. Or the banana pudding shake, which has vanilla wafers crushed up inside it.
It's not a beverage. It's a drinkable dessert.
It is. And people get so creative. The mix hack is huge. Like ordering peanut butter and jelly, which is just peanut butter and strawberry mixed.
I feel like I have to be the buzzkill for a second. We're talking burgers with chili, quesadillas as sides, shakes made of cheesecake, the calories.
Oh, the caloric density is astronomical. It's off the charts.
Like, what are we talking?
If you really tried, you could easily build a tray that pushes 2,500, maybe 3,000 calories in one sitting.
It's a day and a half of food.
It is. But you have to think about the context. Who is eating this and when are they eating it?
It's the 2 a.m. crowd.
Precisely. This is late night fuel. For a lot of customers, it's probably post-bar food. They are not looking for a salad. They're looking for heft.
Which brings us to their whole late night vibe. They specifically target that night owl demographic.
They do. Most spots are open till 3.0 or 4.0 a.m. on weekends. In college towns, they are an anchor of the nightlife ecosystem. Bars close, you go to cookout.
It's a smart niche. At 3 a.m., your competition isn't Chick-fil-A, it's Waffle House.
Or maybe Taco Bell. But Cookout has that home-cooked, fresh burger feel that Taco Bell just can't match.
So what about the tech?
Yeah.
Or the lack of tech? No app. In this day and age, that feels like refusing to have electricity.
It's a very calculated decision. I mean, a building and maintaining a proprietary app is expensive. You need a dev team, servers, constant updates. Cookout just opted out.
So how do you get it delivered?
They just lean on the third-party platforms,
yeah.
DoorDash, Uber Eats. They let those billion-dollar tech companies handle all the logistics. cookout just makes the food.
It fits that utilitarian vibe. Stick to what you know.
Right. Though they have modernized payments, they take Apple Pay and Google Pay, which is critical for keeping those double drive thrusts moving.
And you won't see their ads on the Super Bowl, but you will see their logo on a race car.
NASCAR. It is the most on-brand sponsorship imaginable. The Southern 500 at Darlington races at Richmond.
Yeah.
It just reinforces their identity. We're fast, we're loud, we're Southern.
Now, I want to pivot to something a little more serious.
Yeah.
We've been talking about the chaos of the menu, but for people with food allergies, chaos is, it's dangerous.
This is a really critical point. If you look at their official allergen guides, the news is not great. If you have severe allergies, cookout is a minefield.
It's the cross-contamination.
It's the shared environment, yeah. The sources are very clear about this, specifically the fryers. You think, oh, fries or potatoes, they're gluten-free. But at cookout, those fries are in the same oil as the breaded corn dogs, the hush puppies.
So if you have celiac disease, the fries are a no-go.
The fries are absolutely out. And the shakes, I mean, you have peanuts everywhere at that mixing station.
And some locations use peanut oil for cooking, right?
Yes. And it varies by branch, which makes it even harder. The takeaway is pretty stark. If you have a life-threatening allergy, this is probably not the place to roll the dice at 2 a.m.
That's really good to know. So let's swing back to the fun side of the chaos, the secret menu.
The inevitable result of a kitchen culture where the answer is always yes.
So there are actual named items that don't appear on the board.
There are. The most famous is probably the everything burger.
Which sounds structurally unsound.
It's an engineering challenge. It's a double cheeseburger with literally everything. Chili, slaw, onions, mayo, mustard, ketchup, pickles, lettuce, tomato, bacon. The works.
I feel like the bun would just dissolve on contact.
You have to eat it fast. Then there's the Mexi dog.
Okay, tell me more.
Hot dog with cheddar cheese, chili, grilled onions, and Texas Pete.
Texas Pete, another North Carolina icon.
Yeah.
The hot sauce of the South.
Exactly. And speaking of local beverages, that brings us to the Cheerwine float.
You got to explain Cheerwine for anyone not from the Carolinas.
Cheerwine is a cherry-flavored soda, been made in North Carolina for over a century. It's way more intense than a cherry Coke. Cookout serves it, and since they have that vanilla soft serve,
you can make a float.
You can make a float. And it's amazing.
What about the white cheddar cheese bites? I've heard about these.
Yeah, those are kind of elusive. They're not always on the menu board, but they are often in the freezer. It's one of those, if you know, you know items, you just have to ask for them.
It really feels like the whole philosophy is just yes.
Mm-hmm.
Can I have a quesadilla as a side? Yes. Can I mix Snickers and peach in a shake? Yes.
And that is such a stark contrast to the rest of the industry. Go to McDonald's and ask for a burger with everything. The system breaks. The employee gets stressed.
Because their system relies on rigidity. Cookouts relies on flexibility.
Flexibility, but with simple ingredients. Because they're just assembling these basic blocks, burgers, cheese, chili, they can rearrange them infinitely without breaking the whole kitchen.
So to bring it all together, you have a chain that refuses to franchise, ignores the app economy, serves massive caloric bombs, and operates mostly while the rest of the world sleeps. Why does this work?
I think it works because they aren't trying to be everything to everyone. They know exactly who they are. They are the tray place. They're the shake place. They offer a sense of abundance that makes you feel special, even if you're just spending $9.
It's the anti-corporate feel of it all. By staying family-owned, they've kept a real personality.
Exactly. And by keeping prices low through that clever menu engineering, they provide genuine value. In an economy where fast food prices have just skyrocketed, cookout still feels like a deal.
And they've scaled that feeling across 10 states without watering it down. That's the impressive part.
It is. They've proven you don't need a $1 billion marketing budget if your product is good enough and, frankly, weird enough that people do the marketing for you.
Every time someone posts a picture of their insane tray combo on Instagram, that's free advertising. Look at this corn dog I got as a side dish.
It's viral by design.
Well, I don't know about you, but I have a sudden, very specific craving for a cheddar-style burger and a Cheerwine float.
I'm thinking about that watermelon shake. I might have to wait a few months, but it'll be worth it.
Mark your calendar for July.
I will.
As we wrap this up, I want to leave you with a thought. We live in an era of streamlined efficiency. Algorithms curate our news. Apps predict our orders. Businesses try to remove every chaotic variable just to save a penny.
Mm.
Cookout leans into the chaos. They give you 40,000 milkshake combinations. And a menu that requires a map.
And maybe that's the secret.
Right. Maybe we're all just tired of being optimized. Maybe at 2 in the morning, you don't want efficiency. You want a choice, even if it's the wrong choice.
The freedom to choose chaos.
Something to mull over. We'll catch you in the next deep dive.